Welcome to the Expert Speak Podcast with Michael DeLon. Each episode features a leading expert who shares helpful insights, practical tips, and memorable stories that will inspire you, educate you, and help you enjoy more success, freedom, and purpose in your life. For the next few minutes, enjoy listening to Expert Speak with Michael DeLon.
And welcome to another episode of Experts Speak. I'm Michael DeLon. Today I'm talking with Brendan Frazier. Brendan, brother, thank you for spending some time with me today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a long time coming, but here we are. We finally made it happen.
That's right. Yeah, it's been a long trail, but it's good. Caleb, my son, connected with you first, I think, and then you and I talked back a few months ago. But I'm really excited, Brendan, because you do a lot of things. You are the chief behavioral officer at RFG Advisory. I love that title. You're going to have to unpack that a little bit, but it really does tie into what we do because you help financial advisors build better businesses by helping them connect on a more personal and emotional level with those that they serve. And man, that is so important. And when I saw that, I said, man, we have to talk and share what you call the human side of money with my audience. I know you've got a podcast called The Human Side of Money, and that's really what we're going to be talking about today. So I tell you what, I'm going to pause here as we get ready to dive into this. Brendan, tell me, how in the world did you get doing what you're doing today?
Yeah, so that's a fun question. And also, it's a dangerous one. In fact, I was just at breakfast with a good friend, and he asked me the same question. And what I told him was, you got to be careful asking that question to anybody, because when you start asking somebody, how did you get into what you're doing today in a job that you love, you're setting yourself up for potentially a long explanation, a long answer.
Absolutely.
In fact, when I teach advisors and work with advisors on, hey, how do you get somebody to open up and trust you and connect with you right out of the gate? One of the best ways that you do that is you ask what I call a 3E question.
Okay.
So it's easy, engaging, and emotional.
Okay. Love it.
So if you can get somebody, so don't ask, hey, how was your weekend? How was life? You want to give them a question that's easy for them to answer. It's engaging for them to answer, and it has an emotional component to it.
Yep.
So one of the best ways to ask a 3E question is to ask about somebody's past or their journey to where they got today.
Okay.
Because it's easy because they've more than likely told the story before, right?
Yep.
So, and it has an emotional component because you get to go back and tell about yourself and your journey to where you got today. So it's a great question, particularly to start off any conversation because it gets that person warmed up. It builds a conversational flow. The problem is you've got to be ready for a potentially long answer depending on who you're talking to. So I've tried to whittle it down to make it the most concise version that I can possibly give. The other thing I'll say is this, is that the title of chief behavioral officer, like you said, while it's interesting, while it's fun, not fun, while it's pretty cool to think that at RFG we're pioneering this role, this term, this title for pretty much the entire industry. What it doesn't do well is it doesn't do well in real life when somebody asks your mom what their son does for a living. Or when somebody that I meet randomly asks what I do, and I'm like, nobody really knows, right?
Right.
So, and then of course, in financial services, you say you're a chief behavioral officer, and they'll go, what does that mean? You're going to make me behave? I thought we had a compliance officer for that. So a lot of pros and cons.
Love
basically
it.
What happened was we used to work with a lot of advisors across the country, would talk with a bunch of advisors every day. I kept hearing this same sentiment of, Brendan, I feel like more of a therapist than I do a financial advisor. Sometimes I think I'd be better off with a degree in psychology than I would a degree in accounting or finance or anything numbers related.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing that over and over again and thinking, all right, well, everybody seems to think this is true. But then I would ask, okay, if that's the case, what do you do about it? We get trainings, designations, and certifications on how to do the technical side, like, you know, how to do Roth conversions, how to run a retirement projection, how to evaluate insurance needs, blah, blah, blah. What do we do for this human side? And everybody, and the best answer I'd ever get was like, hey, well, I read a book. And it's like, well, books are good. Books are good. But I just think we can do better, basically. So I start out with in my running my own, building and running my own advisory business, working with clients, and then decide as I'm doing that, you know what? I want to try to get better at this human side thing. Everybody says it's important. I found that part way more fascinating than I did. I would rather read about how to get somebody to open up and connect with you than I would the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, which is literally a moment that I had. I sat there and looked at two articles and thought I like this human stuff way more. And so I thought, all right, I'm going to try to make this human side as applicable as possible in financial advice. Because the thing is the way to do the human side, the skills that it takes, the processes that we can use, the answers were all out there already. They just existed in fields outside of financial services. You have to go look at things like behavioral science, communication skills, neuroscience, hostage negotiation, therapy, right? Like they've all cracked the code on a lot of these things that we just hadn't done. So I was trying to bring those things back into the world of financial services. So I start this podcast. Thought, you know what? I'm going to bring on these awesome, insightful people. Worst case scenario, I'll learn a bunch I can use with my clients. Best case scenario, there's other advisors out there that are interested in the human side of money as well. Well, that was 2020. Fast forward to 2025. 5 years later, the podcast is still going. There's an audience around the world. Turns out there was an interest in it, right? And so
Absolutely.
what happened was once I realized there was an interest in it, that led to speaking requests and coaching and training engagements and so on and so forth. So that's the basically what happened was I sold what I had from a client perspective when I was working with clients, and then went full steam into doing the human side of money. And then RFG called, I guess it's been about a year and a half ago now, and said, hey, we think that the future of this industry lies on the human side, right? As technology does more and more, what we think is that the role of the advisor is going to shift more so into like a life advisor, and then we're going to need the human
100%.
side and human skills. And so we want to hire somebody to lead us into that era. We want a chief behavioral officer. Would you be interested? At first, I said, no, I like running my own business. I don't want to answer any. I kind of like what I'm doing. But it felt something about RFG just felt different. And so, anyways, the rest is sort of history at this point. Now we're trying to pioneer this role and for the industry, and here we are.
That's awesome. That's a great story. Thank you for all of that, especially that the moment of decision to, holding those two articles and going, I really like this. And I love that because what I have found is I love that side too, right? I talk a lot about credibility and building trust and people buy who you are more than what you do, especially in the financial services world. Because I mean, everybody I talk to is a CFP, CHP, CACC, whatever.
Right.
I expect that you can do that. But
That's
I
exactly right.
want somebody that, yeah, I don't know if I need a therapist, but sometimes I do just need somebody to walk me off the cliff to say, hey, Brandon, did you see what CNN said the other day about the market? Well, let's talk about that. How do
That's
you,
right.
and being able to connect on that human level will build more trust and really get you more business than anything else you can do. Have you found that to be true?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so it's I laugh and joke all the time. Like, I've never met anybody, any advisor that's been in this industry for more than a day who stands there with their hand raised and says, yeah, I just don't think it's important to be able to relate to and connect with the human being that I'm working with. Like, I mean, quite literally, nobody would say that. And if they did, if they do, I haven't met them. So like, everybody knows this is a. It's an money's an emotional topic, and we're emotionally charged human beings, and we're working with humans on an emotional topic. And so we all know how important it is. And again, you don't have to, you can spend probably a week in this business working with clients to realize that it's not just enough to understand the numbers, you have to understand people. And to your point, one of the things that you hear often in this business is the phrase that I always heard, and you said another version of it a second ago, is people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so I would hear that and heard it a lot. And I believed it and thought, yes, that is so true. And then I went, well, but then why? Nobody's teaching me how to build trust and rapport. Like,
right.
We have trainings and certifications and designations and pour lots of time and energy and hours into helping advisors know how to the inner workings and all the math and all the formulas that go into calculating a Roth conversion.
Right.
But nobody sits down and says, hey, here's a training and here's how you can repeatedly build trust and connection with a random stranger sitting across the table from you in the first interaction. We just go, hey, yeah, trust and rapport's important. You can get out there, make it happen. But we don't say Roth conversion. Yeah, get out there, make it happen. It was weird to me that it was like, yeah, it's important. We need to do it, but nobody really teaches you how. And so like that was an example of something where I sat there and went, I mean, there are ways, like evidence-based ways, science-backed ways, proven ways to accelerate and build trust and credibility with anybody right out of the gate. But nobody was teaching us that. And to me, that just seemed strange because to your point, I'm not sure there's anything you can do that has a bigger impact on your ability to convert a prospect to a client or retain a client for the long term than to make them feel like you trust, like to have them trust you and to feel heard and understood.
Dude, I was just going to say that I learned that from, I think it's Brian Tracy 30 years ago. The basic need of the human soul is to be heard and understood.
Yeah.
When you do that, and it really plays into something else that we're not taught, that everybody tells you to do. We take communication classes in school to learn how to speak over and over and over.
Right.
I never had one listening course.
Right. Nope.
And I think listening builds empathy and understanding and trust.
Yep.
And trust, I believe, is a factor of time spent with somebody.
Yep.
And if you will just simply, dare I say, shut up and listen and spend a little bit of time with people, they're going to open up.
Yeah.
So how do you, at RFD, how do you help your clients, your advisors, I guess, really begin to not just learn, but apply, because this is a learning process that's just, you got to go out and do it. What are some of the things that you've seen that are, I guess, holding them back, paradigms they have, and how do you shake those up so that they can actually get traction and make a difference in people's lives?
Yeah, so I want, if you don't mind, I'm going to piggyback or add to what you said about listening, because it's something that I'm so passionate about and have made the core focus of the podcast from the standpoint that every guest, I can't remember at what point I started, but it was early on, at the end of every episode, I ask a rapid fire 3-pack of questions. Every guest gets the same 3 questions. And one of those questions is, who is the best listener in your life? And then what does that person do so well that makes them such a great listener? Right. Because to me, it's interesting. Yes, we're taught like how to speak and how to communicate well. And I think that's also really, really important.
Absolutely.
But trust isn't necessarily built when you're talking. It's built when the other person's talking and they feel like you're actually listening and taking in what they're saying. But we're not really taught how to listen well. There's a book called You're Not Listening, which I went through this whole thing, and I'm still a big believer in it, but I went through this phase where I was like, listening is a superpower. And I want to learn everything I can about listening and how to do it better and try to teach it and so on and so forth. So there's this book called You're Not Listening where she says that the author's Kate Murphy. She says that they've done some research. They go and they ask people, how many people do you have in your life who truly listen to you? And about 50% say zero. Yep. And then the majority of the rest say one, maybe two people in their life that will actually listen to them. And then, of course, when you say who are those people, it's almost always a family member or a best friend.
Right.
And it's like it's just such a rare thing. It's really hard to do. But we all know a good listener when we see them or when we experience them. That's why I like asking the question of who is a great listener in your life and what do they do so well? And almost everybody can go, oh, yeah, I have this one person. Mm-hmm. And when I look back on or think back on and listen back to the responses to that question, you can almost always boil down the answer to They make me feel like I'm the only thing that's important at the time. They let me process my thoughts. They make me feel like I'm the only thing that matters in the moment. They don't interrupt me when I'm talking, right? It's all about presence and curiosity is a
That's
quote or
great.
phrase that I like that I think hits home and sums up what a lot of those answers were to that question is be where your feet are. Right, so don't be on your phone, don't be distracted by your computer, but like actually be there and engaging, empathetically listening to what the other person has to say. We all know it when we experience it, right? So I think it's helpful to go, okay, what is it that makes somebody a great listener? So that's what I wanted to point that out because it's something
I love it.
I've just been passionate about and have gone down the path of like how do we teach better listening skills and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so with advisors, basically what from the work that I did with advisors, the work that I did with clients as an advisor, and then from the podcast, just interviewing experts from inside and outside of financial services on behavior and psychology and communication and how do we do this with clients is you realize that there's essentially two different aspects of the human side. One are the skills that you can develop, and the other thing are what are the systems that you can put in place to do this repeatedly at scale. So you have to hone skills and then you have to put systems in place. And so that's where a lot of the work that I do with advisors comes in is first developing the skills and then second implementing the system. So there's really three main areas where I would say any advisor can elevate their human experience, if you will. One of them is falls more so on the skill side, and that's when it comes to building trust and connection, just getting much better at asking really good questions and then listening with empathy and curiosity. And so I always say, if you want better answers, you got to ask better questions. If you're not getting the information that you need or want from somebody, or they're not really going deep, they're not opening up and talking, you haven't made them feel safe, or you're not asking a good enough question. It's like we talked about earlier. You're not asking, hey, how was your weekend? How is life? Like when I go get my haircut, the barber always goes, how's life? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't sit around thinking, how is life? That's a tough question to answer. It's like he doesn't do it on purpose, but it's harming the conversational flow right out of the gate. So ask better questions, get better answers. That's one to build trust and connection. A second pillar of the human side comes more on the process system side, and that's the idea of when you're meeting with somebody, having a discovery type meeting or conversation. Getting to know them, what's important to them is just recognizing the fact that money is simply a tool to fund the life that you want to live, that our clients want to live. And it's our job to help them uncover and realize and dive in and know what's truly most important to them in their life. So not necessarily goal focused. Goals are good, but there's a behind every goal is like the real motivation. I phrase it as behind every what is a why. So what is it that you want to do? Well, I want to retire at 65. That's good. That's their goal, but there's something behind that. Why do they want to retire at 65? Well, most likely, by the way, if they say 65, they won't have a good reason. They'll just say, oh, well, that's what I read that I'm supposed to do. But you find out, I want to retire because I want to be able to spend more time with my kids because my dad died when he was 62, and we always felt like we were robbed of the time that we could have had with them. Third one is the one that's most convicting for advisors, which is the reality that left to their own devices, if you give clients an action item or if you give clients a financial plan with action items, the majority of the time they're not going to do the things that they're supposed to do. Like it's really hard for clients to follow through and execute on your advice. And the perfect plan without execution is pretty much useless. Like giving somebody a list of things to do and them not doing it isn't very helpful. Right.
That's
So,
right.
and if, as advisors, I think we have to realize that unfortunately, the reality is that when a client, we like to look at it and go, well, I told them what to do. They didn't do it. They're not a good client. That's on them. The problem is we know this from the field of medicine. They've done research on, they call it adherence and non-adherence. When a doctor prescribes something to a patient and the patient doesn't follow through, what they've realized is that a lot of it falls back on the doctor, not the patient. So we have to reframe our thinking and go, okay, they're not following through, but could I be doing anything to affect that? And so
Right.
The third pillar is just recognizing that there are behavior changes hard. It's not
Yeah.
enough to just tell somebody what to do. We have to actually help them follow through to implement it, to do it, for it to actually have an impact.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different ways to do that, but those are sort of the three main areas, the three main buckets that I look at when I go, what are three things that any advisor could do to elevate the human experience, the human side of money, day in and day out in their practice? And those are kind of the three main ones that any that I could hit on with anybody.
Yeah, and that's gosh, we could just go deep into all of this because asking questions and listening with empathy requires a lot of time, Brendan. And I've got
And
another meeting coming up, by the way. I mean,
right. That's a barrier to empathy. Time is a barrier to empathy. It requires a lot of time. Although I would argue that, or I would say that it can require a lot of time. What you realize is the more you do it, is that you develop this calibrated curiosity, and you start realizing that you can get there faster, but it can also still take a lot of time. Some people take a while to process, right? So
yeah.
there's also that element of it. But you're right. It not only does it take a lot of time, but it also takes a lot of mental energy and
Yes.
emotional capacity, right? If you're
Right.
gonna sit there and be that present, it's hard to do that 6 times a day,
Six times. Yeah,
for
absolutely.
example, for an hour
Absolutely.
each. Like it can be it's hard to do.
But isn't there in right there, isn't that the pivot, the tipping point, if you will? I don't know if you ever read that book. That was years ago. That I can either meet with seven prospects today and tomorrow and the next day and try to get some things done, or I can slow my pace down, deepen my understanding, maybe make a larger impact in this client's life. So maybe I only meet with three of them because it's so exhausting. But I know them so well. They trust me implicitly. They do what I tell them to do because they trust me implicitly. And they tell all of their friends about me. Now I don't have to prospect as much because I have more client cloning referrals because all of their friends need and want the same thing. They want somebody to listen to them.
So there's a Harvard Business Review had this put out this study. This is a few years ago now, which when I read it and I go, wow, that makes so much sense. I don't know why this isn't like we're not shouting this from the mountaintops, especially in financial services. But basically, what they found was that emotionally connected clients are willing to pay more, they're willing to follow through on your advice, and they're willing to refer more. And you hear that and you go, yeah, that makes sense and that adds up, right? What is an emotionally connected client? An emotionally connected client who's someone who feels like you know and understand their deepest motivations, fears, and concerns. And to understand somebody at that level, their deepest motivation, fears, and concerns. Number one, you have to be really good. You have to listen really well, listen with empathy and curiosity.
Yeah.
The other thing I would argue is that in order to do that, you probably have to have a, this is where the systems aspect comes in. Like you can have a meeting framework, a system meeting
Yeah.
framework that's designed when you pair it with great listening skills, that's designed to get to what's the to get to that person's deepest motivation, fears, and concerns every single time. And
Yeah.
so if you want emotionally connected clients that are willing to pay more, they don't balk at fees, they follow through when you ask them to do things, you're not sending follow-up email after follow-up email, they refer more often, right? It's like that's the hallmark of an emotionally connected client. And I think a lot of us think, oh, my clients like me. They're emotional. It's like, no, that's not just the fact that you know their kids' names and when they want to
Right.
retire doesn't mean they're emotionally connected. That requires going to a different level. And then to your point, seven meetings versus three meetings. I do think that certain people, we all have a different emotional
Oh, yeah.
capacity, right? But you have
Oh,
to
yeah.
figure out what yours is
Right.
and make sure
Absolutely.
that you're. If you find yourself at the end of the day in a sixth meeting, not being as dialed in and emotionally attuned to that person as you were the first meeting of the day, I would say that that's your fault. And you have to find out what your limit is, but that's a
Right.
disservice to that client, right?
100%.
You should have better boundaries around your time and energy to give that client your best version of yourself. And so, you know, that's probably too many meetings a day. Some people may be able to do it, right? Some people may say, I can only do two. Some people may be able to do six, but you got to find what that is for yourself.
Yeah. Well, and what I think what you do, and I'd love for you to unpack this a little bit. At RFG, you help advisors build their business. So this is one component of it, but I've got a, all right, let's get out of financial services, go to real estate. I've got a realtor in Dayton, Ohio, top realtor in Dayton. He has set up his practice like a doctor's office. He doesn't go out on listings. Prospects come in to him, and he's got four listing rooms. And he comes in, he sits down for 15 minutes and says, hey, Brendan, I'm going to be able to help you sell your house for the highest price with the lowest stress in the shortest amount of time possible. Here, I'm going to have Joni over here take care of all the paperwork. We're going to make that happen. I'm going to get started working on it today. Okay, great. And he's out. Advisors, too many of them, I have found, try to be the Lone Ranger. And I think, and I would love your impact here or your thoughts about building a business many times requires more than just one. So if you can do two appointments, if you had some staff around you to do some of the other things, you might be able to do three or four without a drain of energy. Is that part of kind of what you help advisors do?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Good. Yeah. So, but, and a lot of that comes back too, though, to where we always start in conversations with our advisors, which is, what is your vision? What is it that you want to build? Where do you want to go? So I can think of an advisor that we have that I was talking to just last week, where he's got about 75, 80 clients. They all pay. He has good revenue from those clients. It's him and one assistant. And that's what he wants. Right? Awesome. That's the business that he wants to build. So for me to go and say, hey, or anybody from our team to go and say, hey, look, if you do this, if you turn on this spigot, that'll bring in more prospects. And then once you do that, you can hire and then have an associate advisor meet. Like, that doesn't work, right? Because that's not the vision of the business that he wants to build. We have other advisors, though, that say, yeah, I want to have as much impact as possible. I've got this prospect pipeline that's got prospects flowing in, right? So the marketing and filling the pipeline thing isn't a challenge yet. I've got enough demand that I'm growing fast enough that I can bring in. I need to go find other people to help me run this thing so that I can spend my time with my highest and best use. Right. And so then in that case, we help them figure out, okay, here's where you are today. Where do you, like, what do you want this to be? Let's envision what you want to build. And then we can basically give them the proven roadmap to get there. So, like, you know, to your example, like you gave a real estate example, we could go and say, here's an advisor we have that was where you were 5 years ago. Here's like, they were growing at this rate. Here's what they hired, who they hired, when they hired them, to make sure that you're not losing nobody's getting burnt out.
Right.
That you're not stretched too thin. You're not wearing all the hats and you're still able to provide this top-notch client experience where the clients feel heard and understood because you're not stretched too thin, so on and so forth. So yes, to answer that question, yes, that's a big part of what I do and what we do, but it's all within the context of like, hey, what does this advisor want to build? Like, what is it? And if for the person that says, I just want to build my solo lifestyle practice, like we can help them do that.
Sure.
Also.
Yeah. So are you trying to tell me, Brendan, that at RFG, you guys start by asking good questions and listening with empathy? Shocking, right?
That's so funny. I hadn't even really thought of it like that. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess a sort of a practice what you preach kind of thing. That's
absolutely
right.
You know, because there is no right way to run the business, because every entrepreneur has a different vision, a different dream, a different goal, and at different stages, right?
Right.
But here's what I want our advisors who are listening to understand. There is hope and there is a plan in place. All right. And at RFG, you guys have worked with a couple of advisors. You've been around for a while. You guys are doing really well. And it's your growth as an advisor, dare I say, is not going to come through technology. AI is not going to grow your business like you want it to grow. It's going to be the human side. It's going to be the touch point. You can use AI, and there are lots of great places to use technology, but it's not. Technology doesn't build trust.
Right. That's right. Well, so I thought this was interesting because I've been saying this for a while. I've got a whole presentation on the how the, in the age of AI, as we advance and get more, as that technology continues to grow and advance, that it's only going to amplify the importance of the human side. And here's why and how and so on and so forth. Well, then the CFP board just recently released the results of the study that they did, where they went out and they said, all right, we've got a working group together. We want to try to get an idea of what is the future of financial advice going to look like with AI. If we look into the future, what is it going to look like? And they basically said, we don't know, but let's look at a few possible outcomes, right? So they were like, okay, there's a scenario where AI just, it's not as great as we think it's going to be, but it's still there. And it looks in a similar to what it looks like today, you know, which is a possible outcome in the future, right? We all think that it's going to be way better, but we don't know that. They have another one where it's like, oh, AI is even better than we imagine. It's way above, its capabilities are beyond what we've even projected at this point. And then they have options that are in between too. But in all of that, they get this group together. They go, okay, let's look at the future of this industry with all these range of outcomes that AI could possibly have. And then they said this. They said, across all possibilities, one constant is clear. The role of the human financial planner, anchored in trust, judgment, and empathy, is indispensable. So basically, they said in all the possibilities and scenarios that we can imagine with technology in the future, everything from it's not as great as we thought to it's more amazing than we thought, there's one constant, and that constant is that no matter what happens with technology, the human element is going to remain constant. The importance of the human element is indispensable, which I thought was, I think we all kind of know it. Right. But I thought the way they said it was pretty cool.
Well, that's good. Anchored in trust, judgment, and empathy.
Yeah.
Anchored
Yeah. Now, I
there.
do think the word judgment is weird there, right? Like, what do you mean judgment? But you know, I'm sure they have a good reason. Let's just call it anchored in trust and empathy.
And the
It's
ability to help
indispensable.
you make decisions. I'm thinking that's how I
Yeah.
interpreted judgment there, is
Same.
the ability to make, good calls. But
Same. But for somebody that's like, what? That seems odd.
yeah,
Just, you know, yeah.
exactly. Yeah, I
But
don't
I'm
want to be
with you.
judged. This is a
Yeah.
judgment-free zone. So I mean, there's so much here because, I mean, I preach this all day, every day, Brendan, and you know that it's trust. And when you can win the heart, you will get the mind, which controls the pocketbook, right? You'll get there. But if you go after the pocketbook first, you're going to miss the heart.
Yeah.
And you might get some of their money, but you're not going to get lots of their money, and you're not going to get their trust, which gets the referrals and the
Right.
referrals down to their kids. I think
Right.
we're going to have a little bit of a wealth transfer coming up in the next decade.
Yeah, man. Tell you what, if I see another article about the wealth transfer that's coming up, I might
I'm
like I
so
think
tired of that.
it's like we've been saying this for years. We're going to keep saying it for years. Like sorry. To me it's just I don't I, that whole wealth transfer conversation bothers me a little bit because it's like it kind of makes me feel like it'd be like, "Hey, you should lose weight." But it'll happen in a few years. Just wait to like wait for this moment, and then you'll get what you want. And I know we're gonna have a wealth transfer. But I would just say like, I guess one of my core beliefs is like, I don't want to wait around on something uncontrollable to determine my future, right? It's like when the wealth transfer happens, great. I want to be prepared for it, but I'm not too worried about an unpredictable outcome in the future. Like the wealth transfer is happening eventually at some point, and I may not even be around. So I want to know that it's there, but like I don't need to. I'm not meeting my client's family and their kids in the next generation so that I can capitalize on the wealth transfer.
Thank you. That's and that's where I
I'm
was
meeting
going.
them because I think it's the best thing to do for the clients that I work with, and it's always sort of that topic gets me.
No, I do too, because it feels to me, and I don't have the right analogy yet, but it feels to me like that next generation that's going to inherit all that money, they are like targets. And we're like piranha, we're like fish going after, I'm gonna get you, I'm gonna get you. And it's like, no. I love the way you just framed all of that, because it's based on relationships and trust and emotional connections. Dare I say, the human side of money. And
Dare
that's
you
why
say?
I wanted you here, because I mean, we could go deep and deep and deep, because it's so important. And I want everybody listening, whether you're a financial advisor or a business owner doing books, it doesn't matter. It's the human side. And I'll tell you, brother, a year and a half ago, things changed for us when I learned a different sales process. And I have one or two questions I ask in my sales process, and I just keep coming back to that, and I reframe and I ask and I learn and I listen. And I've told three or four people this year, it's like, Brendan, you're not ready for a book. That would be the worst thing I could ever do for you is get you into a book right now. And you should see what they do. They go, what? What? I never expected that. I'm like, dude, that's the... it built so much trust. But
So, and this goes to one of the flagship courses that I built. It's called the Ultimate Intro Meeting for Advisors, right? So, like, how do you have these meetings with a prospect that you've never met? So that it accelerates trust and you can get them to become a client in the very first meeting if you want, right? And it sounds a lot like what you just said, which is the biggest, well, not the big, we go through a lot in there, but the actual like meeting framework that I go through step by step is basically just a question guide. So it's essentially just like, here are the questions to ask in this meeting, which A makes you put the focus on them, which is part of the point. But then B, it's just designed to ask great questions that get the information that you need to determine if they're a good fit. But what it ultimately does is it's questions that help that give the prospect the clarity to know whether or not they need to work with you, which ultimately that's what a great sales process does, is it doesn't say, I'm going to convince you to work with me. It says, I'm going to help guide you through a thought process to help you determine on your own whether or not working with somebody on your money is going to be helpful and beneficial. And if the outcome of that is yes, then I can help you do that. And if the outcome of that's no, that's okay. I'm just here to help you figure out what's best for you. And it's anyway, it's amazing like how it's a reframe, right? And you take this approach of I'm here to help you decide not to sell you. And in the, and what happens, and from anecdotally, but also statistically from some of the follow-up that I've done, is you end up getting more clients. So your close rate increases despite the fact that you're not selling yourself anymore,
Shocking.
right?
It's
And it's just,
amazing.
and it's not even, it's not selfish or manipulative. It's just you're there to help the person and you ask great questions that make them feel heard and understood. And then when they feel heard and understood, they're like, yep, I definitely need somebody. Can you help me?
Absolutely. Because by that time, guess what? You've built trust because you've connected emotionally, and you don't feel like a sleazy salesperson who's just after my money. You actually care for me. You ask questions nobody else has ever asked me.
You
I've told.
and you let me talk most of the time. Sorry, the prospect would be like, man, I just talked most of the time. That's
That's
different than
right.
what I've experienced.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've had people tell me, I've told you something. I've never told anybody that.
That's what I call, that's what I consider to be a signpost of good listening. So good listening's part of the reason listening's hard is because we don't get direct feedback. There's no like very clear, objective, numeric, quantifiable feedback on are you a good listener, right? Like trying to decide am I in shape or not, it's pretty easy. You can get on a scale, you can do some blood tests, you can get your BMI that's quantifiable. Am I a good listener is pretty subjective. So you have to have, we have to have ways to try to evaluate, am I a good listener? Which is why I say, why I call them the signposts of good listening. One of the ways to know if you're a good listener is to check off the signposts, one of which is the one that you just gave, right? It's like another one is somebody that says, oh man, I'm so sorry. I feel like I just hijacked the conversation. Or man, I just talked your ear off. And it's like, those are signposts of good listeners. And if you haven't, if you've heard that before, you're like, yep, I know that. I know that feeling. If you haven't heard that before, haven't heard it in a while, I hate to break it to you. Probably got some work to do.
Absolutely. Wow, brother, we could go on and on and on, and maybe we will. Maybe we'll come back again. But tell Brendan, this has been super amazing. Seriously, you connect with me because we're like two peas in the same pod. We're preaching the same thing, and we believe a lot of the same things. How do advisors who are hearing this going, wow, this is really intriguing. I love it. How do they find you? Follow you, get connected with you and your team. What would be like their best next step?
So if you're sitting there going, okay, this is interesting and I like this stuff, I want to know more and learn more. Three places. Number one is the podcast, The Human Side of Money, where I have conversations with people about all these things every other week. LinkedIn, Brendan Fraser on LinkedIn. I put content out pretty much daily around this kind of stuff. And then I write long form articles on how to do this for advisors on the RFG website. So it's www.rfgadvisory.com. That's where a lot of the writing lives. So it's the podcast, LinkedIn, or the website. You can get it whatever form you want. It's all there. The whole idea is to say, hey, if I'm an advisor, how can I apply the human side day in and day out in my practice, my process, and my conversations? And I try to make it as easy as possible.
That's awesome. Well, you've made this as easy as possible because I just asked some questions. And I mean, it's been great. You've just hit so many hot buttons. You've shared your heart. And I love that you all practice what you preach, the way that you help advisors grow their business by connecting emotionally with their audience. It really does build business, and you're going to end up with the business you desire, because that's where RFG begins, is what's your vision?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Brother, thank you for being here. I'm going to capture all of that, put it in the show notes. So if you're listening to this, go to the show notes, connect with Brendan in RFG, and find out how you can amplify the human side of money in your business. Thanks for listening to Expert Speak. Tune in next week for another great episode. God bless. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Expert Speak with Michael DeLon. If what you've heard today was helpful to you, reach out to our expert guest and see how they can serve you to bring you more success, freedom, and purpose in your life.